This is Rabbi Josh Uter, and this week I'm talking to Tikva Blaukoff-Shine about family and breakups. Monday, November 7th, 2016. We're recording this in Katamon. I am with Tikva Blaukoff-Shine, someone who I met last year when she was the chair of marketing for Limu Jerusalem. Also have done Sermon Slams, though I've never actually been to those. What are Sermon Slams?
Sermon Slams are a lovely mix of poetry and Torah, your reading, in any particular level of mixture that you would like. So if you'd like to give a whole poetry composition with a tiny bit of reflection on any Torah content, that's fine. If you'd like to give a more standard sermon with a tiny bit of verse in it, that's also fine.
Ah, yeah. The closest I did for that was once just randomly threw in a Janis Joplin song, but I don't think that really counts. Tikva is also, apparently just yesterday, started a doctorate in classics at Bar Ilan. So congratulations
on
that.
Thank you. Thank you.
So for today's Midrash, for Parshat Lech Lecha, we are doing in Midrash Rabbah, Parsha 41 Siman Chet, so 41:8. I will read the English first. The text will be online. Goes like this. And the Lord said unto Abram, after that Lot was separated from him. So we're talking about after Avram sent away Lot, after they had the whole fight with the shepherds. Reb Judah said, there was anger in heaven against our father Abraham when his nephew Lot parted from him. He makes everyone cleave to me, said the Holy One, blessed be he. Yet he does not cause his brother's son to cleave to me. Reb Nechemiah said, there was anger in heaven against the patriarch Abraham when Lot, his brother's son, went with him. I promised him, unto thy seed I have given this land, said God, but he attaches Lot to himself. If so, let him go and procure two common soldiers from the market who would inherit from him, as Avram wanted for his nephew. This explains the texts, and it makes a reference to Mishlei, Proverbs 22:10, Garesh Lot v'yetze Madon, cast out the scorner, which alludes to Lot, and contention will go out. Alluding to when there was strife between the herdmen of Abraham's cattle. Yea, strife and shame will cease, as it says, Abraham said to Lot, let there be no strife. He that loveth pursueth of heart, that hath grace in his lips, the king shall be his friend. So, plain English here, we have, after Avram sends out Lot, we have a difference of opinion between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemiah. Rabbi Yehuda said that God in heaven was angry with Avraham because he says, well, you were able to get everyone to come close to God, but you couldn't get your own nephew. Rabbi Nechemiah said there was anger against him when he was attached to him. So, Tikva, what does this Midrash say to you?
I feel like Rabbi Yehuda's angry is recognizing the anger in lack of faith in Avraham's own abilities. If you really loved me, says God, at least according to Rabbi Yehuda, then you could have tried a bit more. Like, I've tried with you. I've helped with you. Why aren't you doing this? Here's a perfect offering that you could have taken from within your own home. And you could have enabled Lot to be on the same path as you. I don't quite see how Lot isn't on the same path as him at this stage.
Right. Well, it seems that the big thing that Lot did wrong at this point was they had the whole fight with the shepherds, you know, over land. And, you know, you would think, oh, you can bring people closer to God, maybe, you know, conflict resolution. Right. Though we don't actually see a lot of conflict resolution. You know, there's a lot of, yeah, there's a lot of sending people away in Bereishit. Not so much, hey, let's work this out.
That's it, especially with Avraham.
Right. And he brings everyone in. You know, there's a saying, at least, I don't know if you have it in England, you know, the cobbler's kids go barefoot.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you can do everything for everyone else, and it comes to your own family, right? You're just somehow unable to do it. Do you think that's a fair judgment, though?
I do feel, at least with Avraham, it takes two to tango. Hmm. And we see that with Hagar and Ishmael and Sarah's intervention there. And Avraham's like, okay, fine, just go, yeah? And I don't really understand how, if the shepherds are arguing, Abraham and Lot's shepherds are having a conflict, what Abraham is doing to try and appease.
You know, that's also an interesting, I didn't think of that. You know, when it comes to Hagar, right, he kind of likes to do whatever Sarah says, right. And here he actually intervenes, you know, to basically just, you know, eliminate, you know, all the conflict. So a bit of conflict avoidance, but, you know, when you say, like, he wants Lot to, you know, cleave to me, it's almost like, you know, he doesn't, let me load up the language here in the Hebrew. It says, one moment, Lot achiv eno medabek. It's almost like Avram's being held accountable. It's not like he's getting blamed for sending him away, but it's almost he's getting blamed for Lot's outcome. So, right, everyone else, you know, is attaching to me, and he can't get his own nephew to attach.
Right.
Yeah.
It's almost a parenting failure with his nephew.
I know. And are you familiar with something called Preacher's Kid Syndrome?
No.
Yeah, this is actually apparently a thing where when you have, like, the kid, a preacher's kid, you know, winds up going off the derech, okay. Like, specifically because you're grown up, depending on your community, you're grown up, you have all these expectations thrust upon you that you didn't choose. So when you rebel, you just go. And there's a certain recognition there. Kids don't always follow that. And there was also a book that came out, Untold Tales of the Hasidim. And some of them talk about, you know, kids of very prominent Hasidic rabbis that, let's just say, did not follow their parents' path. But is that fair? You know, hold the parent accountable?
Perhaps it is. I think it always depends on the child, or always depends on the offspring. At least here, Lot would naturally be expecting to be the descendant and the inheritor of Abraham's way of life and fortune.
Yeah, so you mentioned about the inheritor thing, which, you know, I think Reb Nechemia then picks up on. Like, that thing is like, well, if, you know, he's really supposed to, like, wait, why are you here?
Right.
So what do you think about Reb Nechemia's side then?
Reb Nechemia's saying, at least in my eyes, Abraham, where was your faith? Why are you putting all your eggs in the basket for Lot? You've been told that you're going to have a kid of your own, and it's not going to be Lot, because otherwise you'd be told it would be Lot.
Hmm.
So I guess in contrast to Rav Yehuda, who's saying, come on, you could have tried harder. Rav Nechemia is saying, listen to what God's telling you right now and try and work towards a future that God is projecting for you.
Which is
you will have your own inheritor of your own blood.
Yeah. So, I mean, the way you just phrase it, I think, is a fascinating juxtaposition, because with Rav Yehuda, it's take care of your family.
Yeah.
And Rav Nechemia, yeah, he ain't your family.
He's not your family.
Yeah.
He's not. And even though we're talking about bringing souls in, and Rabbi Yehuda is saying this is a soul who's right there for the picking, Rav Nechemia, the contrast there is saying he might be right there, but the proximity to the family unit is irrelevant because he's not your son, and therefore he's not your son. Like, it doesn't matter who else he is, whether he's your nephew, whether he's your half-brother, whether whoever he is, however close he is to the nuclear family.
Right.
Doesn't matter.
I mean, that's why, you know, the idiom here is like, yeah, just get two random people, they'll inherit from you, just the same as Lot. It doesn't matter.
Right.
And it goes through repeatedly, you know, it says Ben Achiv, yeah. Right? There clearly is some expectation of a connection there, but it's just, like, not enough.
I find it quite jarring. This is a family relationship that's close, and Lot has played the function of son by accompanying him. We have Sarai and we have Lot.
What do you mean by that?
So when it says when we first, I think it's when we first see Lot, Abraham goes with, he leaves where he was with his possessions, that's last bit. He goes with himself, he goes with Sarai, his wife, mm-hmm. and then with Lot. So we have a list of the people with whom he travels, and then afterwards the possessions that he takes with him. So perhaps it's an order of importance, perhaps it's in relation to where he stands in the family unit. But whatever it is, Lot is next to Sarai, his wife.
I see. So it's almost like a surrogate kid at that point. Like, well,
yeah.
You know, people see, you know, mommy, daddy, and another. It's like, oh, yeah, just assume that that's like kind of like a kid.
Right.
Yeah, doesn't quite, yeah. So of the two, all right, well, and you had meant, like, heaven, you know, they're getting angry with him. Now, you know, we talked about this before. You asked, like, why is there even anger? Can you talk about that more, like, your question behind that?
Why should there be anger? Why is there not jealousy? Is this What's the supposition? What's behind this feeling of anger here? If, according to Rabbi Huda, there was anger because God would have wanted Lot to have been closer to him through Avraham's own kiruv action,
mm-hmm.
That's almost a feeling of loss, and it's a feeling of hopes put in Avraham that weren't fulfilled. I'm not sure if that's anger. Is it frustration? Is it despair?
The language in Hebrew is ka'as.
Right, and I don't know why it's ka'as.
Yeah. It's kind of a harsh reaction, too, either way.
Yeah.
Right, so of these two different opinions, it's a pretty much polar opposites, kind of like what we saw last week with Noah, whether or not, you know, he'd be, which generation he'd be better in. Here, Rav Yehuda is saying that, you know, it was bad, or at least implying that it was bad that Avram couldn't, you know, do everything for Lot. And Rav Nechemiah said, well, he shouldn't have even been there to begin with.
Right.
And if you, I guess, reading the flow of the Midrash, it almost seems that Rav Nechemiah gets, you know, sort of comes out ahead. You know, I don't know in terms of what might be preferred in terms of who comes first or who comes second. Rav Nechemiah gets a lot more, you know, space here, and he gets like quote psukim and saying, you see, once you got rid of this guy, everything was better off for you. So, you know, back to like the big question of this thing of what's the point of the Midrash. You've got two opinions here, then a similar scenario tells you the exact opposite. According to one, it's double down, try harder. And according to the other, it's not even just cut your losses, but don't even bother to begin with.
Right.
So what are you supposed to do?
What's Avraham meant to be doing?
Yeah.
Was he instructed beforehand how to behave with Lot?
Mm. I'm trying to think, was he? No, not that I know of in the text. Could be missing something.
So.
No.
I don't think so. It seems like he's adopting his nephew. He's protecting him against the surrounding peoples,
mm-hmm.
And he's bringing him into his own home. At a certain point, there's a dispute, and he gives him the option to go off to wherever he wants. That doesn't mean he's blameless in terms of the dispute over cattle.
Yeah.
But something's good.
Reb Nechemiah doesn't even just blame him for the dispute. Reb Nechemiah blames him for, why did you even try?
Yeah.
Right? Now, if you think of Avram as, you know, this epitome of the Eshel, of, like, bringing everyone in, you know, that's somewhat disquieting because, like, you can understand Rabbi Yehuda's, like, you know, this is your job, bring in as many people as possible, and it's your personal responsibility how things work out, right? So that's certainly one message you can take away, that the point is, well, you have to try harder because it is your responsibility, which is a really tall order. I mean, I used to work in a shul, and like, you know, people actually tell you professionally that's a very bad way to approach things because you are never, ever, ever going to, you know, get, and you, not only you never get everyone on board, but you're going to, you know, really kill yourself trying. You know, I mean, look, one advantage you have today, I guess, in the parallel is there are other shuls.
Yes.
So if you can't do it, someone else can. With Avram, there weren't that many other options.
Right.
And Reb Nechemiah, you know, is almost like a very other extreme. Like, you can understand why, you know, at some point, fine cut losses go elsewhere. But it's like, you know, why do you even, like, bring someone, you know, bad? It's almost like you give up hope before you even try. Which, you know, yeah. What do you think about, like, yeah?
I like what you're saying about the different shuls. I think they're also looking at different parts in the arc of the Lot story, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemiah. And Rabbi Yehuda starts off with looking at the separation.
Mm-hmm.
And Rabbi Nechemiah is looking at the togetherness of going.
Right.
And it would be curious, I would be curious to see how they would reflect on the same stage.
Mm. Interesting. So if you put it together, you can almost say like, oh, I didn't think of that. You can almost say, well, lechatchila, you know, initially, hey, you shouldn't have come along.
Right.
But once he was there, you had everything in your responsibility to do it.
That's it.
Yeah, Reb Nechemiah, though, seems pretty happy when the thing's left, because this is, you know, addition by subtraction.
That's true.
Yeah.
Nice description.
I mean, it is difficult when you think about almost a company or any, like, social dynamic. You try to, you know, interview people and, like, bring in only, you know, sort of, like, the best you can come there. But, you know, from when I was growing up, one of the parallels people gave was between Avram and Noah, where Noah just pulled in, you know, the people who was told, let everyone else drown, right? Whereas Avram was the one who was supposed to welcome people in, unless you can say that maybe there was a difference in that, you know, you could almost see Lot as someone who, what's a good way of phrasing this? It wasn't, because he, as you put it, like, he wasn't really family. You know, you could treat him as like anybody else, but not bring him like so close, like internally, which you could be, you know, like, sure, work with him like you'd work with everyone else, but maybe you also need personal boundaries, right?
Interesting. And so you're saying that Avraham doesn't have those personal boundaries?
Maybe. Or if he doesn't, I don't know, maybe he should have had it with Lot, right? Because there's a difference between, you know, who do you welcome into your house as a guest versus who do you take on as a boarder, right? And who do you, like, welcome into your nuclear unit? If you want to do Hachnasat Orchim, like, okay, sure, be friends with someone, you know, but in terms of how close are they going to bring them into you, well, you know, then it, you know, starts affecting, you know, the entire dynamic around.
Interesting. I like what you say about that. I don't know if I see that with Avraham and Lot.
I'm just trying to understand this particular midrash. Yeah, yeah. Whether or not it... Look, I mean, there's so many midrashim that contradict each other. So, yeah, here... look, this is also the great things, like, we can play by different rules. Sometimes, yes, this works with everything else. Like, no, we're just going to focus and pretend nothing else exists. So, yeah, I'm giving us the liberty to
I like it.
But, yeah. So then the point could very well be, I don't know, before you bring people into your family unit, you know, do a better interview, at least better than you would for a job.
At the same time, I see Lot as kind of like a satellite. He goes off and builds the other shul. He goes, he's given the option of where to go and settle. And in a sense, Avram takes his cue from Lot. The language used for Lot of raising his eyes up and looking up over the surrounding areas and choosing a place to settle in is then doubled up with Avraham a few verses later about lifting up his eyes and then choosing a place to inhabit.
Right.
So it's almost like Lot is the satellite who goes off and creates that second shul where people can go to. But maybe he wasn't quite within the orbit of what Avraham desired for him.
Yeah, we may talk about Lot next week. Either way, because I have a whole thing on like how to view stone. But it's like Lot picked up some of the lessons for Avraham and like got it completely wrong.
Okay.
You know, so it's like, yes, he lifted his leg up, but like, hey, wait a second, I'll do that. And it's like, no, like you're picking the wrong. Yeah. And that happens a bit. Yeah. I know the boundaries thing, you know, just really, you know, spoke to me because it's something that, it's something that which came up a lot, like the rabbi management books that I would read. They weren't written for rabbis, but one of their big things was like knowing your role, right? So if you know like your role as a rabbi, right, or if your role is, you know, some clergy, you're supposed to do X, Y, and Z. You're not supposed to do other things, right? And bringing people in that close has risks attached to it. So in this case, you pick someone who's going to be, you know, argumentative. That's going to affect your home life. And it could be, if you know, if it affects your home life, it's going to affect the job that you do.
Right.
So that could, you know, help with Reb Nechemiah. So maybe we could reconcile it that way, which is, you know, try to get as many as he can, you know, but also while maintaining distance. Whether or not it's important, you know, if it's a matter of, like, not wanting to write people off, like, you know, Reb Yehuda, well, I don't know. Reb Yehuda still bothers me because Avram's held accountable for someone else's actions.
Very much so.
Yeah, and that bothers me. But it could be his point is, you know, for those who... I guess you can find people, you know, for both ways. I mean, this mussar can go both ways. You can find people who write people off too quickly.
Yeah.
And you can find people who, you know, are too open and don't realize that sometimes when you are too open, there are costs to that too. And maybe you need to juggle both and keep them in mind. But, you know, I'm coming from this from, like, a, you know, former professional state. What's your take?
I actually think that's a very interesting point of view. Because I was going to say to you, as an educational consultant, as a rabbinical perspective, what would you say to Avraham in this position with somebody who is depending on his guidance and direction in life? Do you feel that as a figurehead, Avraham let him down? And you're saying overstepping boundaries. You're saying you should have kind of interviewed him a bit more. I'm wondering what you would say to Avraham in that position and what you would say to Lot. Maybe some of that will come up next week, but there's something here about the anger too, and I guess part of your role as being a rabbi is diffusing that political anger that can come up in such disputes.
Right. I'm a little less concerned with, you know, what they tell Avraham, is more as, you know, what Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemiah are trying to tell, like, the Jewish people, like what they're trying to communicate here. And it's almost like, well, you know, here's what Avraham should have done is almost besides the point. Because, you know, all right, you know, that kind of happened. Just, okay, here are the things that, you know, maybe this is stuff that we should be thinking about.
Right.
So, cool. Anything else?
Do you see the anger as the same in both cases, for Rabbi Yehuda and for Rabbi Nechemiah?
What do you mean?
I am not sure of the longevity of the anger in Rabbi Nechemiah's example.
Ooh.
Of whether it can be resolved ever.
That is a good point. I would think if there was a problem of anger, I'd think Rabbi Yehuda's would be more immutable. Because when Lot left, right, his failures are perpetual, right? Because he could have attached, but he didn't. With Rabbi Nechemiah, the anger was when he attached himself to Avraham. Lot attached himself to Avraham. So it's like the lava and nitak lase, you can fix this prohibition by letting him go. Let him go, okay, everything's fine now. Like, you shouldn't have done that, but you kind of fixed it. Rabbi Yehuda's the one where the anger would, to me, seems more permanent.
Although they do revisit each other. So yeah. Avraham does check in on Lot. So
and saves him, you know, which is a pretty big deal.
There is a returning to the source.
Yeah, but it doesn't seem the same. Meaning it doesn't seem like, you know, all right, you got rescued, but you don't seem like hanging around Camp Avraham. Right, again, it's like, you know, sort of moved on, or you know, he might have, you know, we could have just moved on to the whole, you know, Yitzchak Yishmael drama.
There is an arc to this story, which I do wonder what function Lot plays in this arc of Avraham's character developing. And the story of Lot is kind of stuck in between. And I wonder what that says about Avraham.
Can you explain a little more about that?
I mean, we're sort of jumping from the anger thing here at the moment. But
yeah, whatever. It's a free-flowing conversation.
I don't have any suggestions for it, really. It's just that I see this thing stuck in with Lot here. And what function does Lot play? He's not the person to whom we're going to adore, give our adoration, give our respect and honor. This is not Lot Avinu. It's Avraham Avinu.
He's just kind of there. Well, I mean, others, you know, they first heard this from Menachem Liebtag, and I'm sure others have mentioned this, of the whole theme of in Genesis about, on one hand, choosing, on the other hand, pushing people away. Right? So, I mean, here this would certainly be a pushing someone away without the commensurate, like, it's not A or B, pick A, throw away B. Here it's just, you have B. B is not ideal. But also, Avram wasn't told to, like, you know, send him away. He was like, I can't do this anymore. And it's almost like more personal, you and I can't get along. And it's not like I'm choosing someone else. It's you and I are having a conflict. And sometimes the solution to a conflict is to go separate ways. I know it's weird saying that on the eve of the American election. Sorry, someone had mentioned something about not mentioning politics, but I couldn't resist that
one.
Sorry,
it was me who mentioned the word politics to begin with.
Yeah, Owen, you're British, you got to deal with Brexit, so there you go.
There you go, going different ways, separation.
Yeah.
If we look at the progression of Avram to Avraham, Lot must play a part in that, even as a foil. And I'm not quite sure how we should see Avram's development as a person here. In relation to this, I don't see it so positively.
No.
That's.
Why not?
I think mainly from what you said, I'm learning from what you said about how a leader can react. And I see a certain passivity here. It's like, okay, we're not dealing, fine, go off.
Well, sometimes a leader, but sometimes that is leadership. And when you recognize that, you know, you've got different mission, I mean, sometimes it can actually come from places like, you know, can look at breakaway shuls or, you know, people who spin off and start their own companies. And, you know, there are going to be times you realize, hey, it's better off for all parties involved if we go our separate ways because we just want different things. And, you know, we have different priorities. And there doesn't, you know, there doesn't have to be resentment. So if anything, like you talk about a break, it clearly wasn't personal because Avram went back to help him. Right. If it was really that, you know, we just can't, you know, you can recognize, all right, we can't live together, you know, but we're still cool.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
There's one of the things I noticed from the rabbinic world that helped immensely was the fact that there were so many other synagogues in the Lower East Side. You know, we can legitimately, you know, very honestly say, you know, you are always welcome here. Mm-hmm. If you don't like what we do here, there are plenty of other options. And sometimes having those other options prevents the strife because you can go elsewhere. Whereas, you know, if every Jew on the Lower East Side had to daven at the same shul, it would be nearly impossible to get anything done because everyone's got their own different ideas. And sometimes you do need to break off. You know, I mean, I understand, you know, lo ta'asu agudot agudot, you don't naturally want to have so many different breakouts, but look, we're in Yerushalayim, right? How many shuls are here? And could you imagine one shul for every resident just in Katamot, right? Yes. That would be a disaster.
Very much so.
And sometimes the best way you can get along with people is by, you know, almost forming your own little cliques. You have your own little boundaries. Your needs are taken care of. Their needs are taken care of. And because both of your needs, respective needs, are being taken care of, that don't impinge on each other, sometimes it's easier to get along that way because you're not really threatened by each other. You're not, you know, fighting over the same stuff. So, you know, sometimes leadership is, you know, learning to let go or perhaps walking away yourself because you realize, you know, hanging around trying to, you know, bang your head, you know, with two mutually incompatible things gets nobody any, you know, you just wind up getting stuck.
So Lot is quite wise to choose a place which is distant from where Avram is.
Maybe. I mean, Avram was the wise who says, you know what, you know, we can't do this, like, you go and pick. And the fact that he have other things discussed, like, your choice. Meaning, like, he gives you the options, not like, I'm going to take here. By giving someone else the options, like, we do need a split, but almost like, you know, like in a divorce, like, you know, you
take... Conscious uncoupling. He's making Lot a partner.
Yes! And not just a, I mean, yeah, that's a great way of putting it, because it might not have been Lot's choice to leave, but by saying that you get first dibs is very empowering behind it. And like, oh, well, okay, you know, I'm coming out ahead. If it was, yeah, we're getting a divorce and I'm taking, you know, the house and the car and the kids and all that, right? You could imagine someone come out of that and it's like, you know, we need to go. But, yeah, and Avram, you know, doesn't seem, you know, any dishonesty. Avram's saying, here, you pick.
Right.
Right. And that's, you know, a great way where you can actually have, you know, there's a dispute, you have a resolution that involves a separation, but there doesn't really need to be any resentment. That doesn't get, you know, hold over too much. So, all right.
But there is resentment from God's.
Yeah, there does seem to be resentment from God, at least according to this Midrash.
Yeah.
You know, either for stuff that happened before or again for not changing Lot. And it's, yeah, Rav Yehuda still bothers me because, you know, having been in that position, I really don't want to be responsible. I don't know how you hold one person responsible for someone else's, you know, spiritual well-being. In fact, you know, I think, you know, the people who try to do that, you know, wind up causing many more problems. Rav Nechemia, you know, I think for me is, yeah, also a bit troubling in its own right because of the whole, you know, why not try? But anyway, I think, you know, what we kind of, you know, came up with, you know, may, you know, make some sort of resolution for, like, how we can apply both of these today. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, one of my Rosh Hashanah thoughts was choose my company wisely.
There you go. So if you ever want to turn this into a sermon, you know, for one Rosh Hashanah, one of your sermon slams, you've got a great midrash to talk about.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. This has been a lot of fun. Hopefully we'll be able to do it again sometime.
Thank you.
You all.